all too eager ears, only to betray Shahrzad and all those she loved. How could I have been so stupid? How could you do this to us? Shahrzad whispered. I treated you as a friend. You told me Khalid was kind to you.
The Caliph of Khorasan is kind to no one, Desmina replied airily. Or perhaps you've forgotten how you first came to be at the palace. She snorted.
I dare say that's rather convenient.
The Sultan laughed, rich and robust. Despina had the gall to simper in his direction. Now that they sat close to each other, Shahrzad could see it, though it was not a resemblance readily apparent when they were apart. Despina must have acquired her coloring from her mother, but her bearing was much like that of the Sultan. Haughty, proud. Her bone structure was similar to his as well, a sharp brow and a high set of cheekbones. Indeed, Shahrzad could even see similarities between Despina and Yasmin, an ethereal sort of beauty, regal in its manner. No wonder Despina had slipped past everyone with such ready ease, such brazen charm. It was born to her. She was meant to reside in a palace, to slither and snake her way into its inner circle with the very best of the vipers. In a mere 6 years, she'd managed to earn the trust of the Caliph of Khorasan and the heart of the captain of the guard.
How could you do this to Jalal? Shahrzad asked, her nails digging into her palms as she tried in vain to suppress her seething outrage. Her expression unnervingly apathetic, Despina spooned some pomegranate and pistachio rice onto her plate.
Alas, Jalal al-Khori's sentiments are no longer my concern. Then she smirked at Shahrzad, and the feigned sympathy behind it made Shahrzad want to tear the band of shining stones from her crown of curls.
But rest assured, the captain of the guard will have no trouble finding a willing girl to soothe his injured pride, of that I am certain. The last words savored strangely of bitterness. Shahrzad clenched her teeth, willing herself to stay silent and still. She caught Yasmin considering her through half-lidded eyes. It was unlike the princess to be so quiet. It surprised Shahrzad, but then Yasmin el-Sharif had surprised her on more than one occasion. Again, Shahrzad felt as though Yasmin wished to speak, but perhaps had yet to form an opinion, or lacked the necessary nerve in front of her father. Nevertheless, Yasmin looked for all the world displeased. For an instant, Shahrzad thought to engage her, but the beautiful girl would not look her in the eye, still refused to see her as anything but an enemy, not an equal. Shahrzad continued glaring at Despina, while the former handmaiden laughed and joked with the Sultan of Parthia, with her father, as though she had not spent years in a world of deceit. In the midst of Shahrzad's roiling thoughts, a sudden realization rose quickly to the surface. Despina could not have lied about being pregnant, for Shahrzad remembered how Despina had fallen ill before her eyes. Shahrzad let her shoulders relax. She reached for her jewel-encrusted goblet of wine.
"Uncle Salim," she began in a cool tone, "are you aware of your daughter's pregnancy, or did she fail to tell you that she is, in fact, with child?"
"Of course he is aware of it," Despina replied without missing a beat.
"I told you, I am married. It stands to reason I might be with child."
Even more lies.
"Is that so?" Shahrzad clenched her jaw, then took a sip of wine, trying to steady herself.
"And what did you do with your supposed husband? Toss him into the sea when you were done with him?"
"Oh, no," Despina's eyes shone bright. "He is safely stowed away, where he will cause me no trouble."
"Then you brought the poor lout with you?" Shahrzad all but sneered.
"Of course.
What kind of fool husband is this?"
"The best kind, the type to say very little."
"Will you never stop lying?" Shahrzad said through her teeth.
she turned with pointed intent toward Salim.
My lord, did you know the father of her child is
the caliph's favorite bodyguard? Despina finished with a slow smile. Shahrazad blinked once, twice.
What?
She yelled, slamming her wine goblet onto the table. Again, a pair of guards materialized from the shadows. Despina aimed a cutthroat grin her way.
Vikram Singh is the father. Did you not know? And here I thought you two were rather close.
The Rajput? Vikram is here? I thought he had perished the night of the storm.
Stunned into silence for the second time that evening, Shahrazad continued staring at her former handmaiden, trying to reconcile all she'd seen with all that had long been thought and said.
No, that is not possible. Where is the truth in all these lies?
Don't worry, Shahrazad, Despina said. Vikram is safe. Or rather, he's as safe as he can be, given the circumstances. Immediately, Shahrazad's most pressing questions melted away.
What have you done with Vikram?
To her right, she heard Jahandar stifle a troubled sigh, a sigh meant to silence her questions.
Father?
Despina looked toward the immensely pleased face of Salim Ali al-Sharif. Salim took a deep breath, as though he needed time to consider how best to respond.
My nephew's most prized bodyguard is exactly where he should be, in a place reserved for those who fail to hold their tongues on matters that are no longer their concern.
And what matters might those be? Shahrazad asked in a furious whisper.
Well, as my daughter's husband, he should care more for his family rather than for yours, should he not?
Forgive me, Uncle Salim. I thought we were one and the same.
A sharp pause.
No, Shahrazad al-Khaizuran, we are not.
Jahandar gasped quietly beside his daughter. Again, Shahrazad wrapped her fingers around the silken cushions at her sides.
So then, we have come to it. Enough with the pleasantries. What do you mean to do with me?
Salim leaned forward, bracing his elbows along the table's gilded edge.
What do you suppose I shall do?
That depends on what you expect Khalid to do, Shahrazad bit out.
I expect him to come for you.
And what do you think will happen when he does, besides your utter annihilation?
Yasmin finally met Shahrazad's gaze.
Father, Salim did not even grace his daughter with a look.
I expect he will do what he's been too cowardly to do for years. Meet me in the desert with a proper army and fight to see who deserves to rule these lands.
Despite the fear that spiked within her, knowing Khalid still lacked a proper army, a scoff escaped Shahrazad's lips, its sound dripping with derision.
Khalid has never been a coward a day in his life. No matter how much you howl into the wind, it will never bow to you, and you're a fool if you think it will be that easy.
At that, Jahandar's body curved in on itself, as if preparing for the next blow. Yasmin sucked in a breath, and Shahrazad could not help but glance her way. The Princess of Parthia aimed a look of warning at her. Behind it, Shahrazad saw a flash of sympathy.
Easy? Salim began, the word bursting from a caustic round of laughter. Do you think this has been easy? Nothing about this has been easy. It has been years in the making. Years spent watching that sullen boy flout me at every turn. Years spent watching him deny my daughter.
A fist crashed beside his plate.
The only thing that saved him from being called bastard was his uncanny resemblance to his father.
Though Shahrazad caught the second look of caution Yasmin threw her way, she ignored it.
That and the fact that you were afraid of him.
Jahandar gripped her wrist beneath the table.
A rush of anger swelled across Salim's face.
I have never been afraid of him.
You lie, as your spiteful daughter lies. Sherzad smiled. You've always been afraid of him.
Sherzad!
Jahandar exclaimed, finally electing to speak out, only to side with Sherzad's enemy.
Baba, say nothing more.
Daughter, you have defied me. At that, Sherzad tore her arm from his grasp.
And you have brought me here against my will to be used as a pawn by these despicable liars.
I thought to bring you here to negotiate a truce, to help ease these wounds.
To help whom? Sherzad accused, for it seems as though the only person you sought to help was yourself.
The color rose in Jahandar's face, first in a flush of red, then in a wash of white. He looked away, but he did not deny it.
How does it feel, Sherzad al-Khaizuran? Despina said in a melodious voice. To be treated as a slave, to be the servant of people who see themselves as above you, when you know in your heart that you are the same.
Ask your father, Sherzad retorted.
I'd rather ask your husband, when I next see him, kneeling at my feet.
Without hesitation, Sherzad splashed the remainder of her wine into Spina's face. The guards rushed at her, hauling her to her feet and dragging her from the table.
Where is my sister? Sherzad screamed. Where is Vikram? What have you done with them?
Despina wiped her chin with the edge of a linen napkin, utterly calm.
If she wants so badly to see her former bodyguard, then take her to him and leave her there to rot.
Jahandar sat rigid at the table, burying his face in his shaking hands. He did not even glance her way as Sherzad continued hurling obscenities into the air. The guards dragged her through the lamplit halls. After a time, Sherzad put up little resistance, for they meant to shame her as they hauled her along, like the carcass of a dying beast, and she would not give them the satisfaction. The arched corridors took on an even more garish look as she passed beneath their jewel-inlaid alcoves, going deeper into the sandstone palace. The scent of smoke from the guards' torches caught in Sherzad's throat, causing her eyes to water. They dragged her down a series of winding stone stairwells until they progressed into the underbelly of the palace, where the dank cold and the stench of decay took on a life of its own, where it grew thick upon the walls as it seeped its way through the cracks. The cells of the palace's prison were barred by large iron grates, shaped into crooked half-moons. The ceilings were low and the floors were covered in dingy straw. Mold saturated the space, musty and thick. At every other cell, a single torch lit the lichen-covered walls, barely offering any light. The scar-faced, leering guard from earlier yanked Sherzad against a wet stone wall, its uneven surface rammed into the small of her back, jostling her injured shoulder and ripping a gasp from her throat.
"Not so silver-tongued now, are you?" he said, his sour breath hot against her skin.
Sherzad punched him in the stomach.
"Bitch!"
Another guard lifted her off the ground as though to shield her from any resulting blows. Her eyes connected with his, and for a moment, Sherzad thought she saw a flash of panic. The first guard doubled over, clutching his middle and hurling curses her way. Then he straightened and came for her again, his face contorted with rage. The second guard put a hand on his arm, worry etched across his forehead.
"Be careful. I won't be fed to the crows in pieces. If the bastard boy king discovers we've harmed her..." "The bastard boy king will never know, especially after we've decimated his army and left his carcass to rot in the sands."
He shot a disdainful glance at the smaller guard.
"Unless you believe we are on the losing side."
The smaller guard shook his head and looked away.
Besides, the first guard continued, I won't harm her. With a wicked grin, he returned his attention to Sherzad. Not now, at least. Touch me again, and the crows will be the least of your worries, she said. He took her by the hair. I doubt that very much. The guard pulled her closer. He yanked a hooked dagger from his sash. Don't worry. I'll save the lasting damage for some other night. With that, the guard sliced through Sherzad's braid at the shoulder. A shower of seed pearls crashed to the cold stone floor. The Tiger and the Falcon. Khalid was exhausted. He had not properly rested since his return from the desert late last night. Upon Khalid's arrival, the Sharban had railed at him for quite some time. Khalid had let him until he'd been forced to remind his uncle that he was under no obligation to report his whereabouts to anyone, as he was in fact the Caliph of Khorasan. After stating this, Khalid had promptly walked away, only to be accosted by Jalal within his antechamber. His cousin, too, had been furious. I thought you were dead, Jalal said without a single word of welcome. Would that not have pleased you to a degree? Khalid had replied. It's much easier to hate a memory. I would know. It was spiteful without a doubt, but Khalid had always possessed a particular knack for spite. It was one of his many darker gifts, one of the numerous gifts passed down to him, father to son. Jalal had called him a foul name before pushing past him into the darkness. Khalid had thought to go after him, had thought to apologize, but it was no use. He'd tried for weeks to repair the damage, tried to mend what had been broken between them that afternoon near the steps of the library. Alas, Jalal's heart had been lost the day Despina had vanished into the desert beyond the city's gates. And a lost heart was a dire thing indeed, especially since his cousin had never experienced true heartache before. Jalal al-Khoury had lived a life where precious little had been denied him, a boy who'd been blessed with a mother to love him from infancy into adulthood, a father who had always been at his side in support. For though it could be said Aref al-Khoury was a bit standoffish, he'd always loved his son and been quietly generous in showing it. Indeed, Jalal had been denied very little throughout the course of his 20 years. His biggest loss in life had been the loss of his best friend, the loss of Khalid's brother Hassan. Last night, after Jalal had stalked away into the cold corridors of the palace, Khalid had briefly recalled the time when Jalal had come to him after Hassan had died in battle, when Jalal had tried to find a common ground between them in shared loss. Yet another time Khalid had retreated to the shadows, far from anyone and anything, even as a boy. He'd spent so long concealing all from those closest to him that, even now, he did not know how to bring things to light. How to mend matters with Jalal. For Khalid had only begun to feel what it meant to live outside the darkness. This morning, Khalid had told his uncle, the Sharban, the events of the last few days, but he was still uncertain as to whether the curse was truly broken, for he was not one to believe in things without proof. No, only time would provide Khalid with that solace. He had slept again last night, a fitful, restless sort of sleep, the kind that did not lend itself to dreams. But Khalid wanted to hope dreams would come in time, wanted to cling to the hope of dreams. Alas, reality brought Khalid back to his covered alcove, back to his ebony desk, back to a teetering pile of scrolls, detailing the requests collected in his absence. He needed to work through at least a few before he could return to the desert for Sherzad. Just when Khalid had decided he could not possibly parse another page, A resounding knock struck at the doors.
Yes? Khalid looked up.
His uncle strode inside. As usual, it was difficult to read much in his expression. A family trait. In nearly all the men, save for Jalal and Hassan, Hassan had smiled a great deal, especially at his younger brother. Khalid raised his brows in question.
Saidi, his uncle began without stopping in his paces. The captain of the guard has detained a rather interesting party in the palace courtyard.
Interesting. Khalid leaned against one arm of his settee.
How so?
A Badawi sheikh wishes to speak with you. He rides with a small host at his back.
The Sharban hesitated.
And he is in the company of someone I'd advise you to avoid speaking with at all cost.
Khalid stood from his desk, letting loose a flood of scrolls to the floor.
Who is it?
The son of the emir, Nasir al-Ziyad, rides at his side.
At that, Khalid moved past his uncle without pausing for breath.
Bring them to the royal audience hall immediately.
Have you ever seen a room this large? Rahim whispered as he gazed in awe at the diagonally patterned floor of black and white tile.
Pick your jaw off the ground, Tariq said through gritted teeth.
Omar laughed loudly, and the sound echoed high into the ceiling, bouncing off the marble walls. All around them, intricate reliefs depicting warriors vanquishing their foes and winged women with hair streaming in the wind lined the cool stone surfaces. At the base of every column were two-headed lions with iron torches protruding from their roaring mouths. Though the room appeared grand at first glance, Tariq could see chinks in its elegant armor. A crack through one wall, many small fissures through another. The last remaining vestiges of the great storm. It was a grand room, to be sure, but it was a room with a story to it. At one end of the vast space was a raised dais with a low settee at its center. Behind it were a set of immense staircases shaped like open arms. Tariq moved toward the raised dais, with Rahim and Omar in tow. He'd seen this room before. The last time Tariq had been in it had been the night of a magnificent celebration, filled with food and drink and music and dance. The night the Caliph of Khorasan had introduced his new Khalifa to every nobleman in the kingdom. Tariq recalled the moment they'd appeared at the bottom of the open-armed staircases, hand in hand, as though each were but an extension of the other. He should have known then, should have seen with his heart and not just with his eyes. Tariq started from his remembrance when the Caliph descended those same open-armed staircases in a sudden rush. This time, the Caliph did not make a show of his entrance. He moved swiftly and without ceremony. Behind him followed the Sharban of Ray, along with the captain of the royal guard.
Why are you here?
The boy king did not stand on even a semblance of formality. A part of Tariq liked him a bit more for it, but only a little bit. The Sharban flicked a glance toward Omar before drifting past Rahim and then back to Tariq.
Saidi, perhaps we should...
Sherzad is gone,
Tariq said in the same unceremonious tone. The captain of the guard immediately reached for the front of Tariq's ridda.
I knew I shouldn't have trusted you to keep her safe, you feckless...
Without warning, Rahim's scimitar flew from its sheath, slicing toward the captain of the guard's throat. The Sharban tossed a sharp command into the shadows as he withdrew his own weapon. Omar remained silent, taking in the converging mayhem with an unnerving, agreeable expression upon his face.
Enough, the Caliph said sharply.
The command echoed through the hall. The guards drew back as one. Tariq nodded at Rahim, who dropped his sword at the same moment the captain of the guard released the front of Tariq's ridda. "We are not beginning on a promising note, my friend," Omar said to Tariq with a slow shake of his head. "But I do see what you mean about the young caliph. He is not a man of many words." His eyes gleamed in the light of the lion torch to his right. "But he appears to be a man of the right ones." The caliph let his eyes linger on Omar. Though he said nothing, unspoken questions abounded in his piercing study. "I am Omar al-Sadiq," Omar stepped forward, "and I've been told you are a man worthy of earning my trust." "By whom?" the caliph said. "By Tariq, of course." Omar's smile was wide and gap-toothed. A brow crooked into the caliph's forehead. "Did he use those words?" "No, but it was implied in our conversation, in his choice." He paused. "And I believe he has chosen well at last." The caliph's eyes shifted to Tariq. "You see, despite all your differences, the White Falcon has chosen you," Omar explained. "Thus we are here to fight alongside you. It would be a great honor for you to earn my trust, as I quite like your wife, and do not wish to see her come to harm." The caliph's features hardened. Tariq watched his hands curl at his sides. "Sherzad has been taken to the seat of Parthia," Omar continued, "to the Sultan in Amarda." Both the Sharban and the captain of the guard stiffened at the words, though the caliph remained still, his expression carved from stone. "I believe she was taken by hired mercenaries, men contracted by Tariq's uncle, Reza bin Latif, and funded by a sultan who wishes to see you fall from your throne." Omar tilted his head to one side. "So I ask you again, can I trust you?" A small moment passed in which silence engulfed the space. "What is it you seek by trusting me, Omar al-Sadiq?" The caliph replied softly. His knuckles had gone white. Tariq knew the caliph was seeking a trust of his own, for Khalid ibn al-Rashid did not yet know how to gauge the Badawi sheikh. "The lesser of two evils," Omar replied without pause. "That's a rather unflattering overture." "I wish I had the occasion to offer better," Omar grinned, "for I have spent time in your wife's company, and she is delightful. Moreover, she seems to have faith in you. Now it appears Tariq has faith in you, so I would like to follow suit. If you will leave my people in peace and protect the lands on which we thrive, I will ride at your side." The caliph considered this before glancing at Tariq. "You would turn your back on your uncle?" Tariq's jaw clenched tight. "My uncle has lost sight of what it is I fight for, and I..." His lips caught on the words. "I am not certain I ever knew what it was I meant to fight for. But Omar speaks true. If Uncle Reza has taken Sherzad against her will, then you are indeed the lesser of two evils." The caliph nodded. "I cannot rally all of my bannermen in time, but I can send word to those nearby, and..." He stopped in consideration, looking to Tariq once more. "Do you know of the fire temple in the mountains by the sea?" "I am not familiar with it." Rahim stepped forward. "I know of it." Again, the caliph nodded, this time to Rahim. "Would you send a message there for me through your falcon?" He looked to Tariq. Though puzzled, Tariq agreed to the request. "Yes. May I ask why?" "I know someone there who might be willing to help." The Burning Banyan Tree. Sherzad leaned against the cold stone wall. A constant trickle of murky water passed by her slippered foot. The heavy chains around her wrists and ankles clinked with the smallest of movements. She did not know how much time had passed.
Days, perhaps. It was impossible to tell, as not even a sliver of light seeped into the space. The water in the filthy cup left by the grate was brackish. Even the smell of it turned her stomach. The bread beside it was stale and dry. She ate only enough to conserve her strength. Her father had come to visit her twice, to beg her to apologize, to see reason, to work alongside the Sultan to achieve a lasting peace, to surrender. Both times, Shahrzade had turned her back on him, had willed herself smaller, wishing she could disappear for just a moment, so she would not have to face him. So she would not have to admit how he'd betrayed all she held dear. Shahrzade knew she had betrayed her father by stealing his book, but a book was not the same thing as a life, not the same thing as a future. And with this book, her father had taken so many lives that night in Ray, so many futures. Now Shahrzade remained in near darkness. The single torch, two cells over, rarely wavered light in her direction. At first, the guards had come to check on her regularly, to toy with her, to threaten her, to hurl intimations of unforgivable acts her way. They'd pushed her, shoved her face into the muck, twisted her arms behind her back, called her worse names than Shahrzade had heard screamed at wild animals. She had believed their threats at first, had steeled herself for their mistreatment, had waited in the soggy gloom, shivering and alert, promising she would not cry, would not dare give them the satisfaction. But beyond the first guard's cutting of her hair and the occasional crush of her cheek against muck, they did not press further. They did not inflict lasting harm on her. Something stayed their hands. Shahrzade was not fool enough to think it was respect. No, with men such as these, it was never respect. Something was not right beyond these walls, and it was clear the guards were afraid of that something. These thoughts gave her a measure of comfort. For once, they made her see the benefits of an unfavorable reputation, a reputation forged in blood and fury. Let them fear what is to come. Let them know what it is to cower in the darkness, uncertain of their future. Let them be afraid of Khorasan and its king. For Khalid would tear them limb from limb once he breached the city walls, once he learned Shahrzade was here. And when would that be? Again, she was left to think about the perils of wanting too much. But little was served from wanting what she could not control. The past few weeks had taught her that. Shahrzade swallowed dryly as she pulled her knees into her chest. Each passing hour took with it more of her resolve, and she could not allow her will to fade along with her strength. Refused to allow it. She was a tree being lashed about in a storm. She would not break. Never. She had to find Irsa and get far away from this palace. At least now the soldiers were leaving her be. They had not come to harass her for quite some time. At least now she was alone. Shahrzade wrapped her arms around her legs. The sound of her wet sniffle seemed to leap from wall to wall. The torch beyond her cell flickered out, leaving her in utter darkness. "You have not lost hope," a gruff voice resonated from just outside the bars. Shahrzade said nothing. She was not certain if it was another prisoner or a guard still trying to toy with her, still trying to break her. "You, girl, are you still alive?" The voice repeated in a dry rasp. It sounded like a pile of dead leaves gusting across granite pavestones. Again, she said nothing. "I will not break, ever." "Girl, are you alive?" She sighed, loud and long. "I am, you ornery bastard. What of it?" "Good," the voice coughed.
Whoever it was old, bordering on sickly.
"I've watched you these last 4 days. You've got courage."
"I suppose you think I should be flattered." Another cough.
"No."
"Then what do you want?" A pause.
"I don't know yet."
"Then leave me be."
"Have you something better to do?"
"No."
"Neither do I."
The strange old man waited for a spell.
"You remind me of something."
Sherzad shifted as she threw her eyes to the ceiling of her cell, her chains clanking around her. "And what is that?"
"The banyan tree I used to hide in as a boy."
Despite everything, Sherzad's interest was piqued, for he was unlike any of the soldiers who had come to torment her thus far. "Banyan tree?" The rustling sound from beyond the darkness made Sherzad think her strange visitor had settled in for a while. He cleared his throat.
"When I made mischief as a child, I would run to the hollow of a very old banyan tree on the edge of the jungle and hide within it before my father could punish me."
"And why do I remind you of this tree?"
"Because these trees destroy everything around them over time."
Sherzad let out an unamused chuff. "Thank you for the lovely story, old man." He coughed a low chortle.
"I meant it as a compliment."
"Forgive me for not seeing it as such."
"Where I come from, we are raised to see things in a never-ending cycle. I saw that cycle in the life of the banyan tree. It grows big and tall and wide while providing shelter to those who seek it. Over time, it can grow too big for itself, destroying everything around it. But I've also watched it slowly feed its way to new life, provide roots for the new trees, seeds for the new flowers. You are a banyan tree because in you I see this story, the beginning and the end of all things, the hope for something to grow, even in shadow."
Sherzad's pulse started to rise. The old man's voice had begun to deepen as he spoke, had begun to lose some of its raspiness, had begun to roll like distant thunder.
"Be the beginning and the end, Sherzad al-Haizuran!"
A flare of light burst to life across the way.
"Be stronger than everything around you!"
The face of the Rajput shone bright in the flickering flame.
"Make all our many sacrifices worth it."
The Head of a Flying Serpent. The army that made its way to the gates of Amarda was an unusual one, the like of which had not been seen in an age. At its head rode a boy king beneath a banner of 2 crossed swords. His cuirass was of silver and gold, and his rida was of unrelieved black. By his side were his uncle and his cousin. One wore a cloak with a griffin stitched upon its surface, and the other wore a medallion, signifying his status as the captain of the royal guard. At the young king's flank rode a boy in white, flying the banner of a falcon, a boy who had been his enemy mere days ago. At this boy's shoulder rode a host of the finest horsemen, this side of the Sea of Sand, horsemen who had not ridden to war for a generation. Above them flew a young man with a bald head glistening in the afternoon sun, a young man with a gold ring through each ear, a young man on a flying serpent with scales of darkest night rippling with each beat of its leathery wings. A serpent that screamed through the heat with a sound like nails across stone. The host moved in concert, led by this boy king and the head of a flying serpent. Again, it was a rather strange sight, but nevertheless a fearsome one to behold, a sight fueled by a tumult of emotions. But oddly, not by fury, for the boy king at its vanguard had mastered his rage even before he had begun the march from Ray to Amarda, had leashed his control, and his was a control even more deadly in such a state, a fury at its worst in such a case, when it could be shrewdly unleashed at a moment's notice, much like the head of a serpent. The sight of Amarda's gray gates before him made the boy king's eyes flash. Once. No, he was not here to wreak revenge, for revenge was trifling and hollow. No, he was not here to retrieve his wife, for his wife was not a thing to be retrieved. No, he was not here to negotiate a truce, for a truce suggested he wished to compromise. The boy king spurred his black Alhamsa forward, its hooves kicking up a storm of dust and debris. He was here to burn something to the ground. Outmatched. The sights and sounds of clanking metal and wickering horses filled the desert air with an odd sort of anticipation, though Irsa had not yet decided if it was the good kind. Nevertheless, she paced on the outskirts of the newly formed camp, trying to remain lighthearted. "This is exciting, isn't it?" she began, glancing at Rahim sidelong. He smiled, but it did not touch his eyes. "Exciting" is perhaps not the right word. Her expression fell. At that, Rahim reached for her hand. Irsa wrapped her fingers around his as though they were made for this and only this. They strolled through the bustling encampment. Members of the Royal Guard had already completed the work on Khalid's tent and had now turned to their own. Bedouin soldiers were busy raising Omar's patchwork structure. Their hands still entwined, Rahim and Irsa watched the men work in silent concert. "Are you frightened?" Irsa asked. He did not answer right away. "A bit. In most of the battles we've fought, we've had the advantage of surprise. And there is little chance for surprise when you march to the gates of a city and promptly set up camp." Rahim laughed softly. "But the Caliph seems to be a sound strategist, and he doesn't seem prone to wasting life unnecessarily." "You like him," Irsa grinned, "don't you?" "Not really," Rahim snorted. But Irsa knew otherwise. She knew he at least respected Khalid a great deal more than he let on. "Don't worry, I won't tell Tariq." "Tell him if you must." They rounded the shadowed side of a small dune on the edges of the encampment. "It won't change a thing. Tariq and I are kept beyond the inner circle for the most part." Rahim kicked a stone from their path. "Tariq is still incensed that he won't be allowed to go into Amarda with the Caliph when he demands the Sultan's surrender." Irsa frowned. "I don't understand why he would want to go. To be honest, I don't even understand why Khalid wishes to go. That awful man will be unlikely to return Shazi just because he is asked to do so." "Even so, I understand why both of them want to go into Amarda and try." Rahim came to a halt, then turned to shield Irsa from a gust of sand blowing their way. Irsa shaded her eyes. "But you still disagree with Khalid." "I think the Caliph should take us with him," Rahim said firmly. "There's no finer archer than Tariq in the camp. The Caliph is taking the young Magus from the Fire Temple with him for protection, along with the captain of the guard. They'll definitely keep the Caliph safe, but I don't know if they would risk his safety for Shazi's sake. I'd much prefer it if others were involved, others whom I trust." "Do you believe the Sultan will actually surrender to Khalid?" Irsa looked up, her features dubious. "It's less about demanding surrender and more about learning whether or not Shazi is still in the city." "You're worried the Sultan has harmed her?" It was not a question. Rahim sighed. "He would be foolish to hurt Sherzad. For years he's been outmatched in all ways. Though Parthia is a wealthy kingdom, it's never been able to hold a candle to Khorasan. Our armies, our coffers, our rulers have always been stronger.
Until the storm, Irsa said quietly. Rahim nodded. Irsa turned her gaze toward the sea of sand.
Rahim, do you think you would hurt Shazi?
His hands shifted to cup her face.
You know as well as I that Sherzad can take care of herself.
Rahim brushed his thumbs across her cheeks. Irsa wanted to believe Rahim, but she could not forget the events of that terrible afternoon in the desert with Spider. That terrible afternoon, she and Rahim had witnessed Sherzad fall prey to hatred. Had they not been there to help Shazi, something unspeakable might have happened that day. Had Rahim not been there, her sister might have died. Rahim had been Irsa's voice of reason through the turmoil. He'd never flinched from danger. He'd been swift and capable at all turns. Irsa could not forget, and she could not help but remember that Spider had disappeared from camp the following day. No, she would never forget that there were treacherous insects lurking where she least expected them. Irsa lifted her chin.
I'll ask Khalid.
What? Rahim blinked. I'll ask him to take you and Tariq with him when he goes to Amarda, as a favor to me.
A mixture of surprise and gratitude washed across Rahim's features.
Thank you, Irsa John, he smiled. Though I didn't plan for you to speak on our behalf, I thank you.
Please, Irsa whispered, please bring her back safe.
Again, Irsa recalled how Rahim had helped her rescue Sherzad with very little bloodshed.
I know you'll think of a way.
He kissed her hand, then they continued walking along the camp's periphery. After a time, Irsa stopped.
We shouldn't stray too far from Omar's tent.
No, Rahim laughed morosely, for I don't wish to receive another one of his infamous lectures.
You can hardly blame him. They looked for us for hours the day Sherzad disappeared, and we worried them horribly.
Irsa felt the weight of guilt settle upon her once more. Though everyone had assured her there was nothing she could have done to save her sister, that she, too, would likely have been taken, Irsa still felt guilty for having wandered off with Rahim. They made the journey back toward Omar's tent in pensive silence. Aisha was standing outside, her expression warring between a smile and a frown. Before a word of chastisement could be said, Irsa stood on her toes to speak in Rahim's ear.
Don't worry, I'll talk to Khalid.
She felt the familiar warmth curl through her stomach when Rahim brushed his forehead closer.
I'll make sure he listens.
I know. He looked at her with guileless eyes. That's why I love you.
Tariq had not expected the Sultan of Parthia to invite them into his palace. He'd expected the ruler of the warring kingdom to meet them in the desert, with a host of his own. Instead, the Sultan had sent a messenger, requesting to speak with the Caliph in person. So the Caliph made the decision to ride into Amarda under a flag of truce. The Sharban had been staunchly against it, but the Caliph had been adamant, citing the wisdom behind knowing his enemy's intentions. Understanding the game Salim Ali al-Sharif meant to play, the Caliph had refused to show a hint of fear. Tariq suspected the Caliph wished above all to know of Sherzad's whereabouts, just as he did. Whether it was unwise or imprudent remained to be seen. But it would be difficult to lay siege to the city without first knowing whether Sherzad was within its walls, without first knowing whether they could rescue her, without first knowing whether she was safe. So that very afternoon, Tariq Rahim, the captain of the royal guard, a bald-headed boy from the eastern mountains, and a small contingent of guards accompanied the caliph into Amarda, into a palace Tariq could only describe as beyond opulent. The marble fountains lining its courtyards
were studded with jewels. The water itself seemed to sparkle as though it had been littered with the dust of discarded diamonds. The caliph met the sultan in the main courtyard, for he'd refused to set foot in the palace proper. He did not speak when the sultan strode toward him, a wide smile cutting across his elegantly unctuous face.
"Khalid John," the sultan began, "you've brought a larger party with you than we agreed upon. I thought it was to be just you and the captain of the guard."
The caliph did not respond. He merely stood still, cold and intractable. A shadow crossed the sultan's countenance.
"Such behavior could be construed as a threat, nephew, coming to my city's gates with a host at your back, only to disregard the simplest of my requests."
"I care not how you construe my actions," the caliph replied, his words a whispered barb. "I only care that you know this. You will pay for what you have done."
"Pay?"
The sultan looped his arms across his chest, the sleeves of his lavishly trimmed mantle shimmering in the afternoon sun.
"I will not play these games with you, Salim. Where is she?"
Another smug smile. "Have you lost something of import, nephew?" At that, Tariq took a step forward. The captain of the guard lifted a hand to stop him.
"I have not lost a thing, Salim Ali al-Sharif. You will tell me where Sherzad is now, before the words are forced from your tongue."
A muscle worked in the caliph's jaw.
"Before your city is reduced to ash."
The sultan's bodyguards flocked to his side, their hands upon the hilts of their swords.
"Bold," the sultan mused, utterly unmoved. "Especially in my palace, on my lands."
"This is your palace. These are your lands, at my discretion, as they always have been."
"Such arrogance," the sultan snorted.
"If you believed so, why have you not taken them?"
"Out of respect, and because I did not wish to bring war upon us."
"Respect?" Disbelief registered on the sultan's face.
"For whom?"
"For my brother's family."
"Misguided, if you truly thought Parthia so easily won, you would have taken it by now."
"I am not nearly as greedy as you may think," the caliph said with disdain.
"I possess twice your bannermen, and you are outmatched in soldiers and weaponry by more than half. As to the pitiful force you tried to rally in the desert, do you think I could not have ridden through them in an afternoon, if put to task?"
"I think you are a conceited child of ridiculous words, just like your mother." The caliph remained placid, even at the slight to his mother.
"Then chance it, but I will raise this palace, stone by stone, as you waste that chance. And if you are still in it while I do so, then so be it."
He turned to leave without giving the sultan a chance to respond.
"I doubt you'll do that, you whore son. I doubt that very much."
With that, Salim tossed something in their direction. It slid past the caliph's feet. It took Tariq a moment to recognize it. In the same instant he did, he wished he had not. Wished he did not know enough to recognize what lay strewn across the pavestones of the sultan's lavish courtyard. What it was to feel such a thing. What it was to burn with fear and hate in the very same breath. It was a length of black braid, wrapped in a broken string of pearls. The party halted in their tracks.
"My soldiers tell me she smells like a spring garden,"
the sultan said softly, without a hint of emotion. Then he smiled, slowly, cruelly. Tariq unsheathed his sword. All he saw before him was blood.
Khalid had known his uncle Salim would try to provoke him, but he had not known the depths to which the Sultan of Parthia would descend. When Khalid first saw what his uncle had tossed across the stones, there had been a moment, less than a moment, where the world around Khalid had been reduced to cinder, where all he'd wanted to do was crush something between his hands and watch it crumble to pieces. But he'd realized in the next instant what Salim had done, what he meant for Khalid to do. And though Khalid wanted nothing more than to oblige him, blind rage would not serve a purpose beyond this moment. Blind rage was the action of a boy who existed in the shadows, not the king Khalid wished to be. Salim wanted an excuse to attack Khalid in cold blood, to kill him in this courtyard before a string of witnesses, to massacre Khalid in defense of himself, for it was the best way to ensure a legitimate ascension to the throne, one that did not have the stink of treachery to it. So Khalid remained still, the fury boiling in his blood, searing fast in his throat. He did nothing, said nothing, made to turn away from the provocation, to stride back into the desert, with plans to rail at the skies later, when he was alone. Khalid would make the Sultan of Parthia pay for what he had done. There were 100 ways to make him pay, 1,000. But not now, not in this moment. Alas, Tariq Imran al-Ziyad did not know the things Khalid did. So when the boy drew his sword and charged the Sultan of Parthia, Khalid knew what would transpire before anyone else did. A legion of soldiers materialized from the shadows of the courtyard, ready to defend their sultan, ready to strike down anyone who dared to assault their king. Khalid ripped his shamshir from its scabbard without a second thought. "Get back!" he yelled at Tariq, grabbing the boy by the shoulder. Khalid swung his sword to defend the boy from the first blow. Tariq managed to deflect the next attack with an able parry of his own. He stood at Khalid's back as a swarm of soldiers surrounded them, wielding flashes of menacing silver. Soon, the sound of swords being torn from their sheaths emanated on all sides. Though the blood raged through his body, Khalid felt his heart plunge like a stone in his stomach. This was not a battle they could win. They were grossly outnumbered, outmatched in all ways. Nevertheless, Khalid separated his shamshir into two as a pair of soldiers charged his way. As all chaos broke loose, he glanced to his right, expecting to see Jalal there, as he always had been, ever since Khalid was a small boy, ever since Hassan died. But when Khalid looked to either side of him, he realized he fought alone. His cousin battled several soldiers far across the way. Jalal did not even pause to look for Khalid. Just as he'd stated that afternoon before the steps of Ray's library, Jalal would no longer keep watch over Khalid's shadow, would no longer worry unduly over his cousin, over the king who'd betrayed his confidences. Khalid gripped the hilts of his swords tighter. The soldiers were closing in on them. Khalid saw one of his men fall beneath the wicked slice of a blade. He knew they had to make it to the higher ground surrounding the sunken courtyard if they were ever going to have a chance to reach the gates. "Jalal!" Khalid called out, trying to convey his intentions in a glance. But his cousin could not hear him above the fray. Khalid whipped around one of Salim's soldiers, then slashed across his face and chest with both swords. Streams of crimson followed in his wake, staining the sandstone at his feet. "Jalal!" At that, both his cousin and Artan Temujin, who was fighting to make his way through the crush of bodies toward Salim, turned in his direction. Khalid saw his cousin's eyes go wide in the same instant Artan shouted a warning. For Khalid did not see the soldier from behind him until it was too late.
He spun in an attempt to deflect the blow. Then from his right, a figure emerged to repel the onslaught, to save him. It was the boy Khalid had fought that night in the desert. Rahim, Tariq Imran al-Ziyad's friend, Irsa al-Khazuran's love.